I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we're paralyzed with rage and island rhythms. I'm your host, Pin Monkey Bob Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
I'm Henry Gilbert, and I'm not that fancy quilted kind.
Oh, who else?
Nappy Time Chris Antista.
And special guest.
And I'm starfish poacher Cat Bailey.
Cat will pay for her crimes one day. And today
that seems like a gay slur.
Oh, jeez. It kind of does. It really does. I wonder if it was meant like that originally. All right. Today's episode is And Maggie Makes Three.
We're doomed. Doomed, I tell you. Yeah!
Which aired on January 22nd, 1995. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
Damn, Bobby, the San Francisco 49ers have won the 29th Super Bowl. Forrest Gump takes home the Golden Globe, and Pearl Jam's Vitalogy spins the black circle all the way up the popular rock charts.
Oh, man, we're in Forrest Gump mania now.
Yeah.
Here we go.
It should be called Forrest Gump Award Season. It ruins everything.
The Pulp Fiction deserved it so much more.
It's aged so much better, too.
Oh,
and its soundtrack is better, too.
Damn stonecutters loved Forrest Gump.
That's true.
I say outside of its comical take on male rape, Pulp Fiction is a great movie. Isn't it funny if a man got raped? That is just...
Well, yes, it's kind of jokey, but it also, it scars him for life.
True. But it is played for humor, yes. I'm putting on the line
here. Yeah, it's more of a joke than not a joke. But the 49ers, is that their last Super Bowl ever?
It was, in fact, their last Super Bowl up until now. Number 5 was Steve Young, and they destroyed the poor San Diego Chargers.
But so that makes it 22 years since
Poor 49ers. I feel so bad for them as a Minnesota Vikings fan.
I heard about the 49ers a lot growing up because some rich idiot from a neighboring town owned them in the 90s.
Eddie DeBartolo.
A lot of buildings are named DeBartolo around Youngstown, Ohio.
No kidding.
Yep.
So some dipshit Ohio guy can just go buy San Francisco sports team.
I mean, a dipshit used car owner from San Antonio bought the Minnesota Vikings.
No.
Most of the people who own sports teams are dipshit.
That's
rich
disrespectful
guys.
To our California flag, and I won't hear of it. Gotta be from here.
Isn't it the Packers are the only ones not owned by...
Owned by the people?
Like, I know you're a Packers hater.
Packers!
It's quote-unquote owned by the community. Come at me, Packers lovers.
Packs.
Well, you're in a bad sports mood because your baseball team...
Liv. They're on the rise. Minnesota Twins.
My girlfriend's from Wisconsin. Went into a Packers store. The Packers store had another room that was all anti-Vikings.
Ha!
Just an anti-Vikings room. So it's all yellow-green, then total purple. Fuck Brett Favre. I hate him now.
And they say they don't care about us.
Well, who do the Packers hate more, the Vikings or the Bears?
Well,
themselves.
They'll say that they hate the Bears, but they really loathe the Vikings.
This is
they
far
say,
too much
we respect
talk.
The Bears. We hate the Vikings. That's how it goes.
I see.
But Kat has a Vikings agenda, so why should we listen to her?
That's true.
The only sport we'll talk about from henceforth is bowling.
Yes.
Well, hey, we have Kat on here, and this is also an important episode for women.
That's right.
This is the first episode written by Jennifer Crittenden, who is the first, shockingly, in a bad way, the first woman staff writer in Simpsons history.
Yes.
I mean, it's so hard to break into organizations like that, because these dudes all know each other, they're in this world, and then they hire their friends.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it goes in the video game industry, too. But she was 23 when she was hired by Dave Merkin. That's incredible.
Yeah, no previous writing credits. She interned for Late Night with David Letterman, and she was part of a beginner's writing program at Fox, and David Merkin read one of her spec scripts and hired her. I think it helped that she was an attractive young woman, and David Merkin is David Merkin.
Whenever I see a picture of the Simpsons writing room, I'm like... It looks like it fucking stinks in there.
Yeah, a lot of
two more women in there next to your cheese balls and Coca Colas.
Well, not to promote our Patreon, but in our more recent interview with Bill Oakley, he gave us some insight in this one that they had gotten out of that disgusting writers' room for seasons 5 and 6. The writers' room just became David Merkin's big office.
Yeah. I say that because of how this fucking studio smells and how I can hear my pants by how bad they smell right now.
And the Bill Oakley absolutely. absolutely agreed that it was a boys' club, that The Simpsons was a boys' club. He didn't comment on how it was made to be a boys' club. More women joined the staff during he and Weinstein's time running the show as well. Carolyn Omine and I believe another.
Rachel Polita,
yes.
I was just talking about this with my girlfriend last night, because that funny woman on Twitter, I forget her name, but...
Megan Amram?
Yeah, she just got hired as a Simpsons staff
writer. Oh, I didn't know she's on The Simpsons that way.
Yeah,
she's been on Brooklyn
Nine-Nine. Yesterday's of this
she's
recording.
Hilarious. But this recently was a revelation, because before Jennifer Crittenden, there had been two women who had written for the show, but in a freelance capacity. Nell Scovell, who wrote the Blowfish episode, mm-hmm. and Mimi Pond, who wrote the first episode that ever aired, Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire.
Never heard of it.
And Mimi Pond called herself the turd in the punch bowl for having to share this information, but that she said she was friends with Matt Groening, and that's how she got the job, but she didn't get to
collusion!
Be a, she didn't get to be a staff writer.
Forced diversity!
She didn't get to be a staff writer because...
Now, I have a memo here.
Sam
I'm speaking
Simon,
on behalf of the 5% of dipshits in our audience right now.
She says that Sam Simon had been going through a nasty divorce, and he said, I want no women in my office. Mm. And so he chose to not hire any women, and I think it's really telling that Nell Scovell, friends with Gene and Reese, they liked her, but they couldn't get her on staff on The Simpsons, but she was on staff on their show for The Critic. Mm. So it's unfair that we can't hear Sam Simon's side to this story because he's dead, yes. But... Mm. It's...
How somehow getting divorced makes you swear off pussy? I did not know that was the case.
I mean, it's just... Simpsons is hardly alone in having no women on its writing staff. That's most comedy shows.
That's true.
So, and with Jennifer Crittenden, as usual, if you're a woman and you're trying to break into this kind of, like, a more male-dominated field, like I broke into gaming, you have to, A, be talented, and B, be pretty lucky, mm-hmm. and hope mm-hmm. that you get your shot, and then you grab it. You grab onto it, because as usual, people, not everybody is like that, but a lot of people just naturally hire their friends, and they have to stop and think, you know, there are a lot, everybody here has the same perspective and the same thoughts. Maybe we should expand our radius a little bit. Mm-hmm. So.
But some people who don't want to hear those other thoughts would not hire.
Maybe hiring people. My best friend means I'm just doubling up on the same kind of shit I would pitch and write.
But she wrote Maggie Makes Three, and in my opinion, this is a great episode.
The first episode with Maggie's name in the title. Every other member of the Simpsons family has had an episode with their name in the
title. It makes me sad that Maggie is so criminally underutilized, because she can be an amazing comedic character, because there's so much physical comedy involved in what she does. Yeah. She the fact that she doesn't talk.
She was a star of the shorts.
Yeah,
like, the shorts love her. All the Tracy Ullman shorts love her.
Oh, sorry,
and the Oscar one,
short.
Too.
Yeah,
but,
it's really good.
Well, because she's good for a 3-minute gag and a bunch of physical stuff as the unkillable baby, basically, what's her thing. Just to finish on Jennifer Crittenden, she went on to success after success.
Oh, yeah.
She would leave The Simpsons to write for the last two seasons of Seinfeld. She was the co-writer of the second-to-last episode of Seinfeld, which doesn't get aired all that much. The Puerto Rican one? Yes, yeah. But she wrote other great episodes, too. She then would go on to Everybody Loves Raymond, and then would work as a consulting producer on all of season 2 of Arrested Development, and also now is a co-executive producer on Veep.
I think we're forgetting about The New Adventures of Old Christine, Henry.
Yes, that's true. I bet that show's actually all right.
I'm sure it's fine.
It runs in syndication still.
There's 100 episodes of it.
I don't think there are, but the show does that well in syndication.
I looked it up. There's 70-something. Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot more than you would expect from a show no one remembers.
So this is the first episode written by a woman.
Female staff writer. Women had written before it.
But credited, like the sole credited writer for the episode. Yeah. So if we're using 2017 Rick and Morty logic, she ruined the show?
She did ruin the show.
She ruined the episode.
By being on here, she made every
and
character
And using
worse
Rick and Morty logic, this being one of the best episodes, this is somehow ruined once I find out a woman wrote it.
It's true. You shouldn't look at those credits. You should just assume a man did it the right way.
I am just doing our best to appeal to the 5% of horrible people listening right now.
I'm really glad the creator, one of the co-creators of Rick and Morty came out and said and called them out and really had his writer's back. That was really cool.
Yeah, people on the internet, you're awful.
Shocking. Well, when the internet is dominated by teenage boys, turns out that they're awful. Sorry,
except
teenage
if you
boys.
Give us money, then you're cool.
Thank you, teenage
then
boys.
Then
I'll let
it slide.
I had been waiting for this episode as a kid for the longest time because they had done every flashback but not talked about Maggie. And it was just, it was a card they hadn't played yet.
It's true.
They finally played it. I was like, wow, yeah.
But this flashback is the first flashback to a year in which the Simpsons TV show already existed, 1993.
It doesn't even take any liberties with, like, things that were happening at the time.
No, Homer mentions two things, but there are no strictly 93 references.
Yeah, it's like you could have gone out of your way to mention, like, Dances
with Wolves. Dr. Hibbert's haircut.
Yes.
Dr. Hibbert's haircut is all you have to date the episode.
One of three or four early 90 references.
Well, it doesn't help that the show was on when they were doing it, so when Homer says, Homer's two references are to Crystal Pepsi and to the internet. In Homer Goes to College, it's nerds on the internet talking about Star Trek, and in Marge on the Run, he drinks Crystal beverage, so he they already did those jokes.
That's
they can't do those jokes.
They reference themselves.
Well, the funny thing is that I mean, this episode obviously was made in 1995, and I don't know about you guys, but when I was living at that time, I was like, man, the 90s, I mean, you're in it, so you assume that, I was like, you can't see the crazy, you can't see the stuff that's going to become dated, right? You can't see the things that people are going to remember. So it's hard to make jokes about something that happened 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, sitting here making jokes about 2015, you go, what the heck happened in 2015? Mm-hmm. At some point, stuff rises out of that decade, and then you can start making easier jokes about it. But in the moment, I think that was kind of hard. So, but it was also kind of funny that it was like, let us have this amazing nostalgic moment for 2 years ago.
Well, they did it on BoJack Horseman. They did a flashback to 2007. And they nailed it. That was an amazing episode. But I still was like, oh, I guess that was what makes 2007 different from now. In my mind, it was all the same year.
Just wait until 2020. 2000's nostalgia will be in vogue, even though it was a terrible, terrible decade.
That's when Hugh Downs comes back to life.
Pre-smartphones and pre-streaming changed my life. Those two things changed my entire life, and everything that happened before that seems really weird. But the only other thing I'll say...
Smartphones changed everything.
Yeah.
And
as I read my notes off of
And I wanted to see this episode. I was very excited to find that it existed. 3 years after the fact, I learned about this episode's existence in the Simpsons episode guide. I wanted to see if you guys or anybody else had yet another one of those experiences of this did not air ever in syndication. I missed it on syndication
all the time.
But like not
in
1997 or 98.
Oh. I think all of these didn't see it in a syndication thing. It was all up to the whims of the market and the individual purchaser of those episodes. Maybe they thought this was not something they would want to show people. I don't know what the packages looked like. I don't know if you could opt out of episodes.
Maybe they didn't like Homer's sperm and some programmer.
And I'm segueing in a no internet world. I didn't know this episode existed. Wow. I read about it in an episode in the Simpsons episode guide, the first edition. And I every day I walked. Okay, they played the episode Homer the Great, and then boom, right into Bart's Comet. They never played it. They intentionally never showed it.
For me, this one showed all the time, but they never showed the episode where Grandpa's dating Marge's
Mrs. Bouvier.
Mom. Yeah.
That was a rare one in my market, too.
Old money.
I only know that because for the longest time, that was the one we didn't have on tape, or we didn't have the first act on tape, so I had to re-record it. It took forever for it to
re-air. I can give you some help, because I read over this page in the episode guide over and over again, because the only thing I had to know that it existed, and on every single Simpsons episode guide, they have like a profile of somebody or something in the episode, and this being what the middle to the end of the sixth season, the only thing they could profile in this episode was Nightboat. So Nightboat took the sidebar.
The crime-solving boat.
I will also give credit to Critton, and this is a Jeff Martin-less episode who he had done the previous two flashbacks. He did Bart's Birth. He was the writer for Bart's Birth, and he was the writer for Lisa's Birth.
So that's I Married Marge and Lisa's First Word.
But he was gone from the show at this point, but this follows a lot of that template in that it is the family on a couch telling a story to the kids about one of the births. It is giving a flashback with time cues, though they don't mention Joe Piscopo, which is lost there, and that it has a sweet ending too. That's the other hallmark. So Jennifer Critton and the rest of the team on season six, who were not there for those previous flashback episodes, they really captured what made those really special, I'd say. But yes, you mention him. Let's start off with quite a great opening.
We now return to Nightboat, the crime-solving boat.
Faster, Nightboat. We've got to catch those starfish poachers.
You don't have to yell, Michael. I'm all around you. Oh, no, they're headed for land.
We'll never catch them now.
Incorrect. Look, a canal.
Oh, Nightboat, go!
Oh, Every week there's a canal.
Or an inlet.
Or a fjord.
Quiet! I will not hear another word against the boat.
Okay, TV off. It's family time.
Oh, but Marge, night boat! The crime-solving boat!
So that's Hank Azaria doing his William Daniels voice for Night Boat. We heard him in Itchy and Scratchy Land. There's no need to murmur, ma'am.
You're right. Same voice.
You kids might know him as Mr. Feeney. By kids, I mean 30-year-olds, because I hated that show as a kid.
Me too.
Knight Rider parodies were a little hack at this point.
But yeah.
I think it had turned back around to be 80s nostalgic.
I think it had just started to become nostalgic for Knight Rider.
It had been off the air probably for at least 5 years.
86?
Oh, wow.
I feel like it was in syndication because it was on in my house all the damn time. Because my dad watched
and
it.
Every time I watch it, I'm like, this is way more boring than I think it
the
should
be. The coolest
part
is the opening song, and then it's all downhill.
David Hasselhoff walking in a desert. Like,
well,
that's most of the show.
Knight Rider was invented with the idea of leading men can't act, so therefore they're just going to be playing second fiddle to a cool thing. Yeah. In this case, a cool car.
And we also, at some point, should get a sound effect or some kind of notation when The Simpsons accidentally predict something. I kind of hate those clickbait articles and things Simpsons invented, because you're gonna stumble upon some things that happen in 30 years of comedy.
Things that Simpsons invented. Donald Trump
being president.
I wrote one of those articles, by the way, to make fun of the bad article.
That was very good.
Thank God. I thought it was insulted
Bob.
Thanks for compliments over here. Thank you.
but we just on 302010 discovered the series Team Knight Rider of 1997.
There was a teen one?
Team. So and it's all, it should be called Ford Presents Team Knight Rider. Because it's a team of people, not just one, with all different vehicles. And I went through every single episode. I didn't see a boat, but they have planes and motorcycles. I'm sure there is a Teen Knight Rider
boat episode.
I'm positive, and I've refused to do any more research on it.
There better be a tiny Mr. Feeney in every vehicle.
I remember when they thought they could reboot Knight Rider in the modern day.
They
got one
season. They tried it multiple times. There was Knight Rider 2000 as well, which was set in the year 2000, and they had the heads-up display on the windshield and everything, and going, whoa, that's amazing.
It's all in like JNCO jeans font.
Let's not forget the Hulk Hogan vehicle, Thunder in Paradise. He had his own Knight Rider boat in that show.
And the kids' complaints, I think they taught me a lot about media criticism of just they're saying, like, there's always an inlet. Like, that is
being they're very genre savvy, aren't
they? Yes, totally. That if you're going to create a show about a boat, then the boat has to get everywhere. So you just have to go, like, oh, no, look, there's an inlet. Well, we can get there.
It's something I'm noticing more and more. Why do you think kids are abandoning traditional media for YouTube? Because television's always geared toward the dad in the house.
Yeah, that's
true. And
it's
sometimes boring as shit.
And now kids have their own dang smartphones. They can watch whatever they want.
Exactly.
They don't have to let the dad pick the channel. I do like the kind of sweet setup of family time. Like, though, I think...
ever have family time?
In experience...
They tried.
I feel like every once in a while my parents tried to be like, no, we're gonna eat dinner together. We're not going to watch TV. We're
going
to do all this.
They did make us do that every night.
Whenever we did that, like, it would last for about a week. And then we'd be like, no, none of us like
but
this.
But the rest of, like, Mom, we're all going to play a board game together. And she should have just had Marge's voice. Ew, Mom, gross.
Loved each other, but we gave each other space. So we never ate dinner at a table. It was like, I'm going to watch TV in my room and eat dinner. Bye, Mom. Thanks for cooking this.
The worst thing was I would be sitting in my room playing a game or something. Mm-hmm. And then I would hear from the downstairs, Cat, come down here. We're having family time. I'd be like, no. And family time was always, we're going to sit down on the couch and we're going to watch something that I don't care about. I do not want to watch, but I am in the same room as everybody. And we're not going to talk. We're just going to watch the TV. And in hindsight, that's really dark.
Let's not reveal anything about ourselves.
It would be more fun to play a board game together. Though every time
we played board games sometimes.
When we would have board game nights,
we played Monopoly.
Just,
it was horrible.
It would get too mean. We'd always be like, hey, you, no, sell me that. You're mean. Or especially the biggest
what
problem.
What did you guys fight over?
Well, it would often be my mom choosing a side between me or my brother in a game like Monopoly or Risk.
It's all politics.
Like, I'm just like, no, Mom, team up with me in my countries. I think your brother's going to win. You hate me. Why are you doing this,
Mom? Oh, my God. Like, playing Monopoly with kids would be the worst.
It is the worst. It lasts forever.
I introduced my parents to Ticket to Ride, so I feel like
that's a nice one.
I've made their lives a little brighter.
Though actually, my mom gets in the worst mood during Scrabble because she wants to win every Scrabble game. And anytime somebody uses a word, she's like, "We're going to pull up the dictionary right now." And they're like, "Well,
your
let's
parents
do it
are
on
very
the phone."
Competitive. I see.
That is the only board game in history I've ever seen flipped over a loss. but it's the only one that should be because man, it looks great.
There's a lot of pieces. It makes a great mess.
You need magnetic anti-rage Scrabble for that.
Or it digitally can't flip a board.
Can't flip boards with friends.
That is, which my mom plays all the time. I think she actually met my stepdad.
We'll see when Zynga goes out of business.
So I think it was a very true observational thing of moms of them loving photos of their kids sleeping. Like, that was not in a creepy way. That's
because what
like.
Kids do. Yeah. Either they're being annoying or they're asleep.
And when they're annoying, it's harder to photograph them. But,
it's true.
And by the way, people, those are photographs, which are like physical things. You look at pictures of people.
You would take them to a store.
It's a scrapbook.
Kids know because, trust me, I hung out with a bunch recently. The Polaroids are back. And it's so obnoxious.
So it's a hipster
things.
Thing now.
Well, I mean, in the sense of Polaroids, if you want to take a nude of somebody and just keep it to yourself, but what
that's
stops
why we
someone
have
from
Snapchat.
Taking... Yeah. Well, but you take a picture of the nude Polaroid immediately with your phone, and then you have it forever.
So I could picture your phone,
but take a picture on your phone of the Polaroid. Or through the looking glass, people.
I think you just pitched Instagram.
But so you need to know that for the plot of this episode, because photographs of Maggie are a limited resource. There's only one copy of them. They couldn't make multiple copies to be in the book.
If you come from a family with multiple children, the first child tends to get the most photos taken of them.
For sure.
Then it drops off after that. So watching it with trying to watch it with fresh eyes, like, the ending's awesome. Because you don't know, that always happens with, especially with three children.
Wait a minute. It wasn't exactly expensive to print photos back in the 90s.
I honestly can't remember.
I mean, they had one-hour photo places.
Like, they don't want to do
it. Yeah. It was a cost, too. But I kind of wonder, watching this episode, I was thinking, I know people on Facebook who've had children years ago, and almost every moment of their child's life has been documented. Yep. One day that child will grow up and see all of that. Every tantrum recorded, every shitty thing they did recorded. Like, what is the privacy issue with that as citizens of America? What do you do with that shit?
Privacy
is dead,
Bob. Of 2050.
It's true.
Did you see that video we just put on our Facebook? Like, for some reason, every time we play Friday the 13th, the game, an M-rated game about an R-rated movie from 1980, a fucking five-year-old is in there screaming his head off, and it's hilarious. And we had to mull it over. Like, we have to blur this kid's name out. We can't be responsible for blowing up this kid's spot and putting his gamer tag out there.
He didn't ask for that. Like,
that's not what he signed up for, and people on the internet are shitty. So I do wonder, like, if parents post shitty stuff about their children, that could be used as bully ammunition later on.
I think in 2040, we're going to be seeing a lot of stand-ups do jokes about how they had no privacy their entire life because of that.
I mean, in 10 years, we're going to have a president who's probably been on social media for a good chunk of their lives.
Yeah.
Well, 10, 20 years.
Really think we have to wait 10 years for that?
I mean, look at what's happening with Donald Trump, where he says something and immediately somebody finds a tweet where he said literally the exact opposite.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, boy. Where are the pictures of Maggie?
Why aren't there any pictures of Maggie?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It's actually a very interesting story. It all began about 2 years ago before Maggie was even born. Bart, you were Lisa's age, and Lisa, you were the age Bart was several years ago.
Get the camera ready. Bart, very sleepy.
Listen carefully, and my words will shape images as clear as any TV show. It was a tumultuous time for our nation. The clear beverage craze gave us all a reason to live. The information superhighway showed the average person what some nerd thinks about Star Trek. And the domestication of the dog continued unabated.
That's great.
Continued unabated.
But that's great. Notice, watching all these episodes back to back, every flashback episode comes with a Homer triple introduction on what the time period was like, which is why we do the news the way we do.
Or Marge saying Miss Pac-Man struck a blow for women's rights.
Yeah. And the kids are never on board in the first act with these flashbacks. Yeah. They're always looking for a reason to get away or trying to fix the TV that broke.
Because kids don't want to hear about their parents, like whatever that happened with their parents before they were born.
I'd be bored as shit if someone's telling me about my little sister 1 year ago.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I would also say, like,
I remember being there.
Yeah. It's like, I'm 10. I remember being 8.
I'm not drinking yet. I remember everything.
Yeah.
I took Bart and Lisa's groans as them representing the audience when they realized, like, oh, this is a flashback episode. Like,
I did enjoy the pictures of the TV. It looks like we have two TVs.
Wow, see, to me, that represented one of the key themes of The Simpsons, which is the breakdown of kind of the nuclear family. Because they literally are taking pictures of the freaking TV with Nightboat.
Which is next to the mirror, which is a reference to what most people do with their animals. They, like, treating the TV like a pet.
That's true.
Here's the cat or the dog discovering the mirror.
And it's, again, dating it, it's an SD television, folks. It's just how it was. They were that big.
I can't believe they updated it and kept it purple.
And so then Homer basically flashes to Under Siege.
I was at my workstation when suddenly...
Attention, American workers. Yeah. Your plant has been taken over by an all-star team of freelance terrorists.
Not on my shift! Yep! No, you don't! Simpson 10, Terrorist 8.
Homer, tell the story right.
Okay.
Homer, you should see a doctor. I don't think a healthy man can make that kind of smell.
That was Hans Gruber commanding a team of freelance terrorists.
Yes. Yep. I love that they're an all-star team of terrorists.
Freelance terrorists.
Back when terrorists were white people in ninja outfits.
Yes, they were always seen as like, well, they're vaguely Eastern European. Like, it was before the... also, that they would be united in a hatred of America. That it could be an all-star team of international terrorists. And... you're right. That was a Hans Gruber voice, but I took Homer. Homer basically says, not on my ship, though he says shift.
Shift, right.
Which is Under Siege, the only good Steven Seagal film that's actually good.
Oh, I've only seen Under Siege 2. It's on a train!
Wait, you haven't seen Under Siege 1?
No, I never have.
It's got a sexy Playboy Playmate scene in it.
Steven Seagal's now sort of Owl Man.
I heard somebody perfectly say that he looks like Peter... He looks like Peter Griffin in a bad disguise. That's and that's George Foreman challenged him to a fight. George Foreman said, I'll box and you do whatever you want. A fight right now, Steven Seagal.
I used to love his political commentary, but back when it was like, I'm going to take you to the bank, Senator. The blood bank.
Yeah,
such a good clip on YouTube.
He's the only guy who would make a film about murdering industrialists, but now he's just a crazy.
Several films where he's like murdering on the side of activists.
Yes, though now, as was pointed out on the great podcast Chapo Trap House, that he's on TV saying like these un-American people kneeling for the flag. He moved to Russia and renounced his American citizenship because he would be prosecuted for sex crimes in America.
What a brave man.
He's a Russian citizen now. Like, that's who's... Look up
Steven
Seagal.
Steven Seagal?
Yes. Of it's related to that lawman thing. He
Roman Polanski and Steven Seagal.
I like that Burns, Lenny, and Carl laugh at Homer and say it's something you don't see in actual action films of people laughing at their...
Yeah, the wise cracks.
They're cool, dry wits of an action hero.
One-liners.
And that here's the thing you need to know, listeners. Like, one, you'll never be free of debt. But the two, don't quit your job until you have another one lined up.
We didn't do that.
Well, we had another one lined up and then we had a Patreon.
That's true.
But is this not unfathomable? Do you ever see a point where you can quit your job and go work at like a fucking mute?
No, Homer's crazy to even be like, oh, I'm free of debt. One, you're never free of debt. Like, you never would be. Like, his mortgage wouldn't be paid off.
No.
How do you know? Like, maybe he did, in fact, pay off his mortgage. He's debt free.
I mean, he says he is, but...
He owns the house.
But this is on behalf, Kat, of people who have their paycheck's not written on anything and no one withholding anything and no insurance. Like, I just can't imagine having enough to walk away ever.
Absolutely. Well, and he works like a blue-collar job, and like a main theme of the entire show for like the first three seasons is we don't have enough money.
Yes.
So it's
with two children?
With two kids.
If I make it hyper-continuity,
yes.
They did buy the house using money from Grandpa selling his old house, so that could have helped with the mortgage and maybe help paying it off. They lived there for... If Lisa is now six in this episode, they've lived in that house for 6 years. Boy, boy, even with grandpa's help,
I'm depressed. At 36, Homer got to retire.
But more to the point, Homer is not taking into account things like medical emergencies because he wouldn't have health insurance.
School
working.
Shootings, which are not covered, pre-existing condition.
Like I guarantee that if Homer had actually been able to keep that job, they would have been screwed at some point.
Yeah, well, probably. I think in Homer Loves Flanders, we find out he makes $5 an hour. Yeah. A pin monkey salary can't be much less than that legally.
Actually, as a continuity nerd, I had some problems with it, but Vox.com actually did a whole video about Homer's wage, and they were like, they used his bear tax paycheck.
Yes.
When he shows his, complains about the bear tax and his Homer tax, aka the homeowner's tax, you see his full paycheck, so you know what he gets paid weekly, which was in 1998. $400 a month.
That was 1996, Henry.
Damn you.
I really hope somebody was fired from this podcast for that.
But so they extrapolate from that, but they also say, well, he had all these other jobs. My rejoinder to that, when they try to predict how much money Homer has, they forget that they got bushels of free diamonds from an evil ape researcher when they went to Africa.
What, season 10, I think?
Season 12.
Whoa, okay, no wonder. Boom, oh, no. You. We canceled each other out.
Help me.
Sorry. It is hard not to identify, though, with Homer quitting a horrible job for his dream job, because that is what we did too. Like,
me and
Bob did it very recently.
Our boss was telecommuting that day, so he couldn't play his head like a bongo, but I really wanted to.
I really did, man. But we had to do it from like his living room and just see him, like, I don't know, probably switch off his screen and then scream a bunch, maybe. But
yes, we did burn a bridge on the way out, though.
To me, quitting your job on your own terms is a luxury, because all of my other jobs ended with my place of employment literally shutting down.
That's another problem with this episode that makes it unmodern, in that...
Well, it's very 90s, right?
The expectation is Homer would have this job for life. You have no jobs for life nowhere now. You don't have that. You are always laid off.
It's a very old school concept of, I'm here forever.
Yes. Yeah.
But moving on.
Burns can even threaten him with, you'll be here forever, because, like, no, you won't. You won't have a job. You'll be laid off.
Sell this company to someone else, move it overseas, and there's no job security anywhere.
A dead-end job was a luxury.
Yes, exactly.
Considering it.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
Homer's obsession with Dick Clark never really comes back either.
Yes, it was Dick Clark on Carson, Dick Clark's birthday, and stalking Dick Clark. Yes. So he's still stalker.
Well, he is previously a stalker. This is 2 years ago. Remember?
Oh, right. This is before Chef Boyardee and Charles Kuralt.
And when Bob and I quit, I did imagine the telling off of Burns in this scene, which is, it's really beautiful.
Did you hear me? I said I quit, Monty! And since I quit, I can do anything I want.
Is that so?
Ooh, lovely desk. It would be too bad if someone, I don't know, didn't use a coaster! Such a nice, tidy office. Maybe it's time you started living like a pig! I hope I haven't upset you, Bongo Head!
I should be resisting this, but I'm paralyzed with rage and island rhythms.
Yeah, way to play the boss's head like a bongo, Homer.
He's getting a pretty good sound out of that guy.
That's for employing me for 8 years.
The burning bridge.
And he literally burns a bridge, which Dave Merkin was like, I want this animated gag in here, because you can't really do that in real life.
Really smart. That is one of my favorite Twitter gifs to respond to something. Mm-hmm.
My pinned tweet is a gif of that from when I announced mm-hmm. that I've quit my boring day job
yeah.
to then start this. It is burning a bridge, aka Homer.
My opinion is some bridges are shitty and worth burning and yes. probably will disintegrate under their own free will at some point. So who the fuck cares?
And sometimes burning that bridge builds a new bridge in front of you that you yeah. didn't realize.
Well, I've never found that to be the case.
I don't like to burn bridges personally because I feel like you never know when a good relationship is going to come in handy, and we see that with Homer.
Those he will regret this.
He,
yes.
he will all regret this. You never know when you're going to regret.
Kat, I'm sorry, but you're complicit in our bridge burning with our former company. So
this is true. Yes
you're an accessory to this.
You got me, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, you'll get there.
Good
soon.
Luck working there.
Someday you realize all your dreams are doomed.
Well, still working on it. I'm still going strong.
Way to go, Kat.
But yeah, that I also saw, you know, you see Lenny and Carl again getting a bunch of screen time because they are now regulars on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And as they point out on the commentary, and I never really noticed it as a joke, but that Homer's plan involves quitting his job and then hoping he gets his dream job. He didn't even try to get his dream job first before quitting.
Okay, I just want to point out, I can't believe that Marge, who, to my knowledge, controls the books...
Yeah.
would allow him to be like, yeah, no, I'm going to quit, and I have figured out everything that needs to be happening. Oh, and by the way, I don't have a contingency plan if I don't get my dream job.
That's true. He counts. Marge just trusts his bookmaking, which I absolutely wouldn't do with Homer.
Yeah, I would not allow Homer to figure out what the budget is. I'm sorry. Homer's budget is... What? Quilted toilet paper? And, and one of you can't go to college.
Uh-huh.
That's it. No, I guess they didn't already have cable. But yeah, so Homer applies for his dream job.
And now, the final phase of my plan. Hey, Barney, any chance you can get me a job here?
Sure, Homer. I told you, my uncle owns the place. Hey, Uncle Al, can Homer have a job?
Sure. Barney, you're fired.
Okay.
Show up tomorrow. Bring three rags. Oh, and change your pants.
Why?
When it happens, you'll know.
So Barney's Bowl-O-Rama, where Homer works in this episode, that was a season one thing, and it burned down in Moaning Lisa. They announced on the TV that like the art gallery burns down, and then this museum burns down, and also the bowling alley burns down.
Well, they clearly rebuilt it.
It's true.
Yes. Well, this is a flashback. This is before Moaning Lisa.
Oh, true.
Yes. It was established when they were, you know, creating the show that Barney would own Barney's Bowl-O-Rama,
which is named
after him. But
I
then they decided
my nephew.
He's too much of a drunk to run a business. So this sort of retcons that into it being his Uncle Al's business that he named after his sweet nephew who he fires.
But did you notice not until the last shot of the Bowl-O-Rama does Barney... the word Barney appear in front of Bowl-O-Rama.
Yeah, yeah, ever. That's true.
They removed it from the logo for the rest of the scenes. In other episodes, it is back to being Barney's Bowl-O-Rama, but yeah, it's
always
just...
will be in Bart versus the Space Mutant, yes. So I'll never be able to erase it from my mind because all the stupid time I spent in that level.
It's a mainstay in every old Simpsons game because that was the content they had available to pull from. Just like these locations like Howard's Flowers, Candy Most Dandy.
We didn't have enough hard drive space to make a Barney sprite. Here's your reference.
But when Barney's Bowl-O-Rama exists in that world, it's like, but even season one, Barney is not a guy who could run his own business.
No,
like,
no.
It's impossible. And
Al Gumbel comes back in the Pen Pals episode.
So, well, it's a great retcon of creating Al Gumbel as the owner who kind of looks like Barney. And...
even filthier than Barney. He's covered in stains.
True. And that Barney takes being fired to make room for Homer very well, too. He does. And so, yeah, then they do the budget and...
Well, you know, Barney has a million jobs. I mean, of course he does.
Tell him, Big Baby sent you. And I have to say, that pin monkey salary to me sounds like a minimum wage job.
Yeah.
And I don't care if you are debt free. There is no way a family of one income earner could live in the house they live in with two children at school in the same way they had been. I'm not saying people don't do that. It's
cost of living in Springfield's amazing. Like,
have you seen it? It's so polluted.
But I can say this as a former homeowner.
Isn't it the least desirable city in America?
That is true.
As a former homeowner, you still have to pay the government an enormous amount of taxes on your home every year. It's mildly less than what you would be paying in a shithouse fucking two bedroom. But that's about what it is, even when you own your house lock, stock, and barrel with the mortgage paid off.
And that's why if you ever win a house in a contest, take the cash prize. Don't take the house.
And good freaking to government.
I would take the Simpsons house in that contest.
I wish, yeah. That house, I wish
it went to somebody who wanted it.
Some old lady got it. Boo.
Yeah, boo. So then to celebrate it, they go out and have drinks. They listen to Copacabana, which is the 1978 Barry Manilow classic, which after Barry Manilow came out, I like listened to some of his music again, and I forgot Copacabana is a depressing song. It's about the Copacabana, but it is about a showgirl who falls in love with Tony, but Tony gets in a fight with a local mobster, and Tony dies in the fight, and then the showgirl spends the rest of her life hanging at the bar at the Copacabana in sad, like, grief. And his last lines of it are like, "Don't fall in love at the Copa." Yes, yeah. Hey, welcome out of the closet, Barry. It's good out here.
He saw a lot of knife fights in Vegas, I guess.
I think it might have been a gun death in the song.
See. I'm thinking of Mac the Knife.
And then we get a cool From Here to Eternity little homage.
Right.
I like that Homer enjoys. Marge doesn't like sand in her underpants. Homer does like it. And just as I love it, his kind of hip swivel to get the sand in different places after he puts more sand
and
in.
And Marge is too practical to be caught up in the moment. Yes. The moment of passion, he's like, let's go home.
Yeah. I mean, she's already got some sand in her underpants. To make love on the beach would mean increasingly more sand in those areas.
Too much friction involved, frankly.
No,
ouch.
No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No one showers. They don't shower when they get home, though.
They don't.
They
That's
just
true.
Kick off their clothes, and seconds later, we have a baby.
Did you notice that Homer and Marge are dressed basically the same as they were in Some Enchanted Evening?
You're right.
Marge's arms are colored incorrectly, and her gloves are colored correctly in that it's her skin tone instead of orange, and her arm-length gloves are orange instead of white, but it is the same costume.
Interesting, yeah.
I wonder. I would doubt that was in the script. I would bet that was more the writer of the animators.
Given Homer's move in the career world, it makes sense that they had a dinner at Krusty Burger in the drive-thru to celebrate.
and then they demonstrate sex to their children.
Great animation.
I love you, Marge.
I love you too, homie.
Everything in our lives is finally perfectly balanced. I hope things stay exactly like this forever.
Mm-hmm. Homer semen.
No! Woohoo! Do you have to be so graphic?
It's okay, Marge. They paved the way for this kind of filth in school.
The cool movement Homer is doing, David Silverman animated that. No one else could do it as much as he wanted to, like, show them how to do it. He was like, let me do it. I'll do it. And he did it himself.
It is perfect. His, like, wiggle. Like, it's
I also
great.
Like how it's implied Homer came in seconds. It says seconds later.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
That's not surprising with Homer.
Yeah.
With Homer, yeah. Well, and maybe he's been raring to go all night, and now he's finally just popping off. But it's... I guess as a kid, I never realized, like, I knew what semen was in a scientific term.
I mean,
but I didn't realize we were, like, literally looking at Homer's cum.
The Look Who's Talking movies paved the way for this kind of filth.
Oh, I get it around.
Really did, yeah. Yes, every movie opens with somebody coming.
Well, in previous...
Even dogs!
Yes. Yeah.
Thanks, Mom.
Look Who's Talking 2 starts with dog cum.
Now.
Tell your kids.
In previous
now, Look Who's Talking now.
Look at oh, yeah, now.
We're
sorry.
Never going to hear the end of it, I don't care.
And previous episodes had already established that in the world of The Simpsons, your semen is your head. Like, your head is your semen. That's how it looks. But
That's a horrifying thought. Anybody have any Photoshop out there? Yeah. But I want to see Henry's sperm.
But we just talked about actually paving the way for that filth in school as not happening when we were kids.
Not
like,
at all.
I didn't. Actually, Kat, did you have sex ed or was it abstinence
only?
Oh,
okay. We definitely had sex ed.
Wow.
Starting in, like, when I was, like, in fourth grade. We were in individual classes. The boys got their own classes and girls got their own classes.
Same here.
And we were learning about how the female body works and the miracle of childbirth and everything. And as we got older, it was kind of we kind of are dancing around how sex actually works, but let us explain puberty to you.
Yeah.
So
they never explained how sex works, though, or birth control or any of that stuff.
There was a long story about Jack and Jill and how Jack really wanted to have sex with Jill, and then they have sex, and Jill suddenly misses her period, and she's not feeling so great. And, oh, Jill had a kid. Now Jack has to pay child support, and their lives are ruined forever.
Jack didn't Jack, and he spilled in Jill.
Well, the second Herb Powell episode, we do see Homer's sperm. He has a very low sperm count, and that's why he's given that award for outstanding achievement in the field of excellence.
That's true. I guess, though, this was the last time his boys were really working.
That's true. That is the future, so I think the radiation gradually killed his Homer sperm.
They spent more time telling us how tight pants cause jockage than telling us how sex worked in our sex ed classes.
No, I wonder, this implies that Homer, I guess, so does she not normally take birth control? And does this,
there's a lot of questions that would not be raised by a sitcom in 1995. One of them, again, we mentioned this on, I believe it was Not Lisa's First Word, I Married Marge. There is no talk of abortion.
Well, it is
in
possible to get pregnant if you're taking birth control.
True, true.
But
especially
I think
with my sperm.
I suspect that she wasn't taking birth control because they never had sex, as we've kind of seen in previous episodes.
That's why they fuck pretty consistently, though.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, in
but maybe this is a special occasion, so he took the glove off.
But as I said on that Talking Simpsons episode for I Married Marge, no sitcom would broach the subject of abortion. A child that was coming was an inevitability that you had to have.
That's true.
Yeah,
except for that episode where Uncle Jesse had mercy and fired Les and Becky. They were going to have quadruplets.
I mean, the closest thing we have here is when Hibbert says, is this an unwanted pregnancy? Which, but he talks about the black market before talking about...
That was
just
a test.
It wasn't just that he went on the black... Like, was this in the news now or 2 years ago? And why did he have a specific dollar figure for the worth of a baby?
Well, I learned from Stranger with Candy, white babies are worth more.
Babies don't cost money, they make money.
Sorry, Chris. I didn't realize how taboo abortion was in the media until I watched the BoJack episode about abortion.
Yeah.
Where they delved into it actually pretty deeply. And, you know, Diane takes a trip to the abortion clinic. Sorry, spoiler alert. And you're like going, oh, wow. Like, they really go a lot of places with this episode that even now TV shows often would not address because abortion is too hot of a topic.
I don't think a network show would do that unless you're Maude.
Maude, and then there's Maude.
And then there's, well, even for them.
And only Maude.
It was a huge deal when Adrian Barbeau in that episode says abortion once.
Yeah.
And it's, though it's also crazy to watch it because it was made like a year or two before Roe v. Wade, so they're just talking about how in New York it's, legal now. It's, it was a mind fuck to me, like, in my mom's lifetime, it became legal, and like, but by the way, you can obviously outlaw abortion, unlike guns. Like, you can't, what can you do? Outlaw guns? Everybody's gonna get a gun.
Even a 10-year-old movie like Knocked Up, rated R, filthy. In continuity is like, don't say abortion. And so the rest of the movie, they call it a gagortion. Because it's still too hard to say.
Well, there's just still a scene of like, no, I don't want to. Well, same in Juno. Like, it has a big scene of like, no, I guess I can't do it either. Like, obviously Juno would be a very different film if she just was like, okay, I'll just have an abortion. I'm not ready to have a kid now.
I'm just going to get on my soapbox. Marge, get an abortion. Come on.
Yeah.
You can't
Maggie
afford
should
abortion.
Be dead.
Yes, no, Maggie.
Kill Maggie.
Look, I love Maggie and everything, but it's obvious that you can't afford to give her a good life, and your family is going to suffer for it. So are you going to give her a bad life, or are you going to take care of the kids you have? That's what I ask.
So anyway, Homer's having a great time in his new job.
I was in heaven. If horse racing is a sport of kings, then surely bowling is a very good sport as well.
All right, great job, Homer.
Thanks a lot, Homer.
Hey, you're the best.
I'm gonna make it after all.
So Mary Tyler Moore throwing her hat at Nick LaMalle is probably the most important moment in Minnesota history. I just want to point that out. I have read full newspaper profiles about that moment.
Did they ever find the hat?
They always interview the lady who was standing behind Mary Tyler Moore, judging her and going, "What is this strange lady doing with her hat?"
My word, throwing
that's
a
not
hat.
Where hats go.
You would forget that the show is set in Minnesota for anytime they're indoors.
It's mostly
a
LA set.
But that was a reference I did get because I was watching Nick at Night all the time, so I knew Mary Tyler Moore. But there's also, before that scene, a nice couple of mms of urinal fresh.
Bowling fresh.
And that, though, the sad thing is, like, this shows you this... Homer can either make a good amount of money to support his family and be miserable, or he can be poor and happy, but he can't have both. Like, he can't.
That's basically capitalism, Henry.
Yes, yeah. If it's a job you enjoy, then you should be paid nothing because your enjoyment is the payment.
Life is suffering.
Mm. Homer has hit the crossroads that I feel all adults who are lucky enough to have a job eventually hit, which is to ask yourself, all right, well, I'm kind of bored with my job, and I'm not really that interested in doing it, but I have a certain lifestyle. Am I willing to just kind of accept how boring work is in exchange for being able to live my life, or am I going to pursue something that is a little more fulfilling in my work days? Personally, I decided that I wanted to write about video games at a relatively early age, and I somehow made that happen. I don't know how I managed that. And while it's a lot of hard work, sometimes I have to step back and go, yeah.
Pretty cool.
I got a pretty cool job here.
I shit on my job all the time, but I every day take a giant humble, this is awesome that I get to do this.
And conversely, my girlfriend, her job is not the most exciting thing in the world. She does market research, basically, and sales stuff. But when she comes home from her day at work, she's done. Mm. And then she can go to a concert.
That is something I do tend to. I'll say it, masturbate over something. It's a job I can walk away from at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never had that job.
I have not had that job in a decade. Yeah. But it also reminds me, I did get my dream job at 20. I got a job at Suncoast Video in the mall, the mall DVD store, a deeper selection than Best Buy. It was worthwhile. And guess what? Like Homer, fucking great at it. And guess what? Nobody cared. The company cared. Did you sell any DirecTV subscriptions? That's not my fucking
job.
You're
here to sell Entertainment Weekly, Chris, not to sell movies.
Yeah. Bob clearly heard the story too many times.
Yeah, I worked in the mall at that time.
Oh, and because if they used a credit card, they try and hoist some fucking subscriptions to magazines of them. They'll charge them forever. Like, that's shady as shit. But you called me on my personal time 8 weeks because someone came in with a movie recommendation, and I can tell you what it is. Didn't matter in the slightest to Suncoast. They did not care that people would come in to tell me a dream of a movie they had. Oh yeah, that's the five stair steps. Here, it's over here. I've seen that.
Actually, my expertise was punished. I worked at a software, etc., with just terrible, awful managers who hated where they were and who they were. And I remember helping a mom for 20 minutes, recommending games, walking her through systems and hardware. And I rung her up, and she's like, "You know what? You did such a good job. I'm going to give you a tip." And she slides a $5 bill over to me. And the manager comes by. Manager comes by and is like, "He's not allowed to take tips."
Oh my god!
And I'm like, "You have made me a communist from this day forward. I renounce all capitalism."
But Bob, check this out to us. We still deviate from The Simpsons. It turns out having a job where you knew a lot about movies and entertainment and you could talk about it in a store, that wasn't worth paying me for. But look at what I do now.
Yeah.
I had that exact same thing at Blockbuster as well, and at AMC Theaters.
I could not get a job at Blockbuster. Tried every year.
I was not valued by GameStop, a division of Scumco.
College kids always beat you out for it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They they want a cheap kid or a go-getter. Like, it doesn't... Yeah, it's... for that $5, they could have kept you as somebody with faith in capitalism.
Shit. If this all goes tits up, I think I could be happy working at some kind of Blockbuster, working at an Alamo Drafthouse, and not molesting people. I know what you're
saying. Chris, I have bad news about Blockbuster.
Well, there's probably exists in some South American country.
There are five of them.
The mom and pop video store I worked at Berkeley, which stayed alive for a very long time, finally closed 2 years ago. Even that couldn't last.
And, so
the Shino Ballo joke, I do love that. It's really good animation. It's really good animation of the shine on his head. And that is when I, as a viewer, noticed Homer had three hairs, not two, on his head.
Could have been qualified to lead stone cutters.
What does the thing around his ears count as?
I mean, that
it's a hair.
Is that a hair?
One more hair, yes.
David Halo.
Holy crap, he is the ugliest man ever.
Well, when they call it all but three hairs
in Stone Cutters,
that implies that the M around his head is one hair, even though it can't be, but times it's been treated as a single hair, not as a drawing of some hair.
I want to think it's an abstraction to suggest more hair.
That's always
hard. But it's just like Matt Groening's drawing style. You cannot really explain what these features are.
I mean, it exists that way because it is an M and the ear is a G, so that is why his hair is that way. Anyway, meanwhile, and there's a cute little kind of Looney Tunes homage of showing how the pins are made.
Yeah, it's set to Raymond Scott's Powerhouse.
Yep. It's beautiful. And meanwhile, as Homer is enjoying life, Marge gets the bad news, and then they completely sell out Hibbert's character.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Mrs. Simpson. You're pregnant. Am I to take it that this is an unwanted pregnancy?
Oh, no, not exactly. It's just that I haven't told Homer yet, and with his new job, I don't know how we're going to be able to afford this.
Well, you know, a healthy baby can bring upwards of $60,000.
What?
Of course, that was just a test. Had you reacted differently, why, you'd be in jail right now. Simply a test.
I mean, Dr. Hibbert doesn't have a character, to be honest.
Well, when he first appeared, he was very serious of telling kids, like, don't imitate a death artist. Like, don't do that.
But in the season, he had the tubes to carry away people who couldn't pay. Remember Bart of Darkness?
Yeah, he did that. He's also a member of the Republican Party and of the Stonecutters. Like, he's not a nice guy, but this is him, like... This implies he has been selling children before. He knows who to sell babies to. This is really evil stuff he's engaged
in. It's pretty dark.
It's very dark.
I just looked it up. I literally Googled how much does a baby cost.
You are now being tracked.
And good. I hope I am. Give me a baby. apparently, according to a 2010 article on a website called Sue's Rocks, a Canadian baby could be purchased for $10,000.
That's it?
And then up to 30, and a woman in Florida was arrested for trying to sell her baby for $75,000, but the buyee could only get 30. So 30K. 30K of, like, 7 years ago's money.
Man, yeah. that's dark.
Cost of an iPhone? I don't look at prices.
So we skipped over the scene, but I just wanted to observe the bit where Homer was like, there was literally no way to know that Marge was pregnant.
Yes, yeah.
And Marge, of course, is running into the bathroom. Can I tell you, being pregnant sucks. Mm-hmm. I've not been pregnant, but I've had friends who have been pregnant, and watching their abject misery...
Yeah, it looks pretty horrible.
Infected cuticle hurts, so I get it.
My poor friend threw up basically every day for the first 3 months. Now try imagining that.
Well, I only thought it odd, really, Marge isn't going to ever mention that she's pregnant. Fine, Homer's very unobservant, but she just never mentions it. She would know, right?
Well, what? I mean, she's clearly like going, oh, God, no.
After
what
all the throwing
do?
Up, yeah. Then she goes to Hibbert to find out and get it confirmed, but... Yeah, that Homer wouldn't know what morning sickness is, just he's that stupid. And that's like...
Every girl I sleep with does in the morning.
when I think of the... When I've heard about the pain of childbirth, I remember hearing a joke on Night Court where a woman was... They had like 18 women gave birth on Night Court. It was like a running... There was
in
like one where three different women were having a baby at the same time on that show, including the Vietnamese bride of the black guy on Night
Mac.
Court. Mac's Vietnamese wife. But well, because he was a Vietnam vet and he had married her and then she came to live with him. Anyway.
Right, talking Night Court.
But the joke was, it said, have you ever tried to push a bowling ball through your nostril? That is what I'm doing right now.
I didn't need sex education in school because Night Court taught me everything. Exactly. Thanks to Dan Fielding.
John Every Larkette, Dan Fielding baby. Joke of like, oh, I guess that's where a vagina kind of is.
Pregnancy and childbirth terrify me.
Yeah, it's scary. Well, this is something, too, that we can't be in touch with this episode, is that so many jokes are about Homer and Marge being trapped in the debt that children create, and it's just like, well, none of us have kids. We have, so we have more disposable income because it's not being thrown down the kid hole.
Like I said, I have multiple friends now who have kids, and I've watched... I mean, from a distance, like what it has meant to their lives and everything. Mm. And if anything, Marge and Homer are lucky because seemingly they're able to continue to sort of live their own life. Except not Marge. Poor Marge.
Marge just ended her life. I mean, her life's over. But she learned to live with it. But yeah, I have friends who have kids, and they seem pretty happy.
Oh, I love my friends' kids.
But it's a game changer for sure. Like it totally changes how you spend your money, how you spend your time. The whole nine yards, so I'm sure.
More Legos.
And I can't even imagine having three of them.
Oh, God.
Oh my! Just and one is freaking killing my.
Never
friends.
Heard me say this a thousand. Homer's my age. Like I have to have try and imagine having three kids, one of which is an infant.
Uh-huh.
Good Lord! See how dirty this table is.
I also remember a coworker of mine. She got pregnant with the plan to just have one kid, and then she finds out she is having triplets. It's like, oh my God.
That's
like,
good abortion city.
Your first, she had them. Like, instead, it's one thing, like, your first kid will kill you. It's like, no, you need to learn to deal with three kids from the start. Like, well, speaking of having more kids, like, the scene where Marge is telling Bart and Lisa about Maggie's coming is that I come on
arrival
Maggie's arrival. It did make me, watching it as a 12-year-old, think, oh, what would happen if my parents had a third kid? Would I hear this speech? Like, we never did. We stayed at the two of me and my brother Sam.
I begged my mother for a little brother.
Well, wait, is everybody a two-person family?
Yeah, I have one sibling.
I have an older sister.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so none of us, if you are a third, if you have a third kid in your family, let us know how specially that changed the dynamic for you.
A third kid, or as we call it, the ruiner.
So one of my friends was the second kid in a three-person group.
And so you go from the baby to the middle child.
So what happened was that his brother was the favored child, mm-hmm. and he and his younger brother fought for scraps, essentially. Oof. And it was pretty sad, actually. And from that point on, he was the middle child forever, and it seemed to really affect everything about him, like how like he saw himself, how he lived his life. Like, he was extremely bitter about that whole thing. So,
For some reason, a bunch of my best friends were the last child of five or six. And watching, I think they became our best friends because their parents did not give a fuck. We've gone through this with four other children. We're not going to overthink this. No curfew. Eat whatever you want.
Raise
who gives a shit?
Great.
Order a pizza. Who cares? Call a cab. I don't care.
We're very tired.
They all had that luxury here. Don't stay above the garage. We won't bother you. We'll build a bathroom. Just don't come in the house. We're old now.
I've read parents' blogs that are like, the first baby, you're like, oh my God, I have to do everything right. Mm-hmm. I'm like doing everything. And by kid three, you're like, okay, whatever. Yeah. I've been here, done that.
I didn't fuck this up before.
Which is sad, actually, because I would think that every single child should be getting 100% of your attention, 100% of your effort. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, like, apologies to anybody who has multiple kids who are listening to this. I personally would only have one.
Mm. Well, I've heard the argument that having more than one lets your kid have somebody to, you know, fraternize with all the time, instead of being like an only child means they're not getting as much socialization.
I would have rather had a much closer relationship with my parents.
My dream child situation is Nightmare on Elm Street 5. it is in 2 years. A 15-year-old in a 3-piece suit shows up on my doorstep. We're best friends, but I can still drink with him. All good. That's my ideal child scenario.
American Psycho, gotcha. Yeah.
So this is Bone.
You said 3-piece suit. I could think.
So Homer, though, meanwhile, is unaware of all this and is just happy, so happy he prays to God.
Homie, I
can't talk. Praying. Dear Lord, the gods have been good to me, and I am thankful. For the first time in my life, everything is absolutely perfect just the way it is. So here's the deal. You freeze everything as it is, and I won't ask for anything more. If that is okay, please give me absolutely no sign. Huh. Okay, deal. In gratitude, I present you this offering of cookies and milk. If you want me to eat them for you, give me no sign. That will be done.
Asking for no sign gets you all your prayers met.
I do like his realistic if cynical attempt at prayer. Just like, I know God will not answer me, of course, so I can give myself these things.
Well,
it's pretty analogous to my relationship with God. give me no sign and I'll do nothing.
Also that he says, like, dear Lord, the gods have been good to me. Like,
right.
So he's thinking...
Forgot about that.
He's a deist over just God. He's thinking of... then we get to see Patty and Selma basically poisoning Maggie in the womb, which is pretty dark.
There's a lot of
smoke
in that room.
The most dated joke, the weirdly most monstrous joke ever. Mm-hmm. Seriously.
Yeah, that Marge wouldn't tell them to put out their cigarettes.
I mean, just a few years later, California had banned smoking inside restaurants.
But it's a child coughing in the womb.
But we were talking about secondhand smoke by the 90s, too. So.
Yeah.
There's a joke about it in Fargo. I was just rewatching Fargo recently. I love Fargo so much. But the secondhand smoke joke is just like, hey, could you crack a window? You know, it's been shown that secondhand smoke is carcinogenic, it's poisonous. Like, it's
even if you're on the fence about that, there's no dispute over birth defects. And a baby in the womb is coughing. I still think that's insane.
It is a pretty dark joke.
I think it's a joke you wouldn't be able to get by censors now.
Previously, I think they made Baby Lisa cough, too.
They blew smoke at her, and the crib shakes. But that was back in 1984 when they didn't know better. Now they should. They
were making the same noises at her, too, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so it's almost like a callback to that.
It's true. Patty and Selma love babies. Over the age of two, I think they kind of hate them.
Selma's desperate to get married and everything, so.
But then they make a promise to not tell Homer.
I like this.
I've got to tell Homer about this baby in just the right way and at just the right time. Until then, please keep this to yourselves. If he found out now, it would probably destroy him, huh? Oh, yes. Gotta go. Wait a minute, wait. I know that look. Now promise you won't tell Homer. Oh, we promise we won't tell Homer. Hello, is this A. Aronson? It might interest you to know that Marge Simpson is pregnant again. Just thought you'd like to know, Mr. Zukowski. There. Aronson and Zukowski are the two biggest gossips in town. In an hour, everyone will know.
Great Another twist. Great joke that only works once, but I still respect it.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful F.U. joke that obviously you think they called everyone in the phone book, but it's really that in Springfield, the two biggest gossips are the first person and the last person in the phone book.
And for no reason, they took a huge break in between calling them.
Yes. Well, that time cut could have removed 2 seconds. It's just to make you think that it was so great. I love that joke so much.
A couple notes. First, I think this is the second appearance or a second mention of Aaron Aronson, because I believe he was mentioned also in...
Aaron A. Aronson.
Aaron A. Aronson.
Bob.
Arthur Applebaum.
And Sideshow Bob Roberts.
That's correct. I totally missed that.
He's no A gorilla.
But also, in Hot Fuzz, they mention Aaron A. Aronson as a joke, and then when they save the redheaded kid from Timothy Dalton's character, the redheaded kid is named Aaron A. Aronson.
Wow.
A real Aaron Aronson, a Jewish agronomist, botanist, and Zionist activist who was born in Romania and lived with blah, 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 but right at the top, not to be confused with Aaron A. Aronson, a fictional character in The Simpsons episode Sideshow Bob Roberts.
I assume there are several Aaron A. Aronson just by statistics alone.
Homer's resistance to learning that Marge is pregnant is also so great. It's obviously too ridiculous. He's too stupid, but
It's not stupid. He's really just going out of his way not to know.
That's true.
He's not.
Another perfect day in my perfect life with my perfect job.
Hey, just heard the news over the squawk box. That's nice work, Homer.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It is nice work.
Well, Mr. Simpson, I have just heard about the little bundle of joy. Congratulations, sir.
It's true. The bundle is little, but I'm not in it for the money.
Hey, Homer, way to get Marge pregnant.
This is getting very abstract, but thank you. I do enjoy working at the bowling alley.
Look how lecherous Mo is.
Yeah.
He's mainly interested in the sex part of it.
That's true, but I just love that. That was the same laugh he gives with like, nothing working in the bedroom. I just love how Homer says, this is getting very abstract. That's a smart way of saying that, too.
This entire sequence, starting from when Patty and Selma say that they're or start calling people all the way up, and Homer starts ripping out his hair, is just a masterpiece of comedy. It works so well.
It is.
Windy as hell out there.
So, first we see the baby shower, and that's where Homer... at the baby shower, by the way, is Ruth Powers, who did not move into Springfield after Maggie's birth. So more discontinuity.
There's so many continuity errors in this episode.
But yes, then Homer stumbles upon the baby shower on a particularly windy day.
Baby shower!
Baby shower? You know I haven't told Homer yet, and he'll be home any minute.
Oh, really? Phew.
Hey, it's windy as hell out there.
Hey, wait a minute. What are all these presents? It looks like you're showering Marge with gifts. With little tiny baby-sized gifts. Well, I'll be in the tub.
By the way, congratulations on your new job, Homer.
New job. Huh. Marge is pregnant? No!
Great reaction by yes. Dan Castellaneta.
It was beautiful, and that's when I noticed him pulling out his third hair.
You can really hear it in the Foley. It sounds painful.
Yeah.
But that hearing, only being complimented about his job is when it all clicks together for
all
him.
Of the Marge's pregnant compliments were taken to be, oh, you're talking about my job. And the job compliment was like, Marge is pregnant. It was a nice reversal of that logic.
And the windy as hell out there line, too, is another great misdirect of like, oh, Homer burst. Oh, no, he doesn't. Marge can't close the door. She almost does. I was like, "Well, hey, I'm here." All right, time to get in this hair. All right,
Let's talk about the hair.
This is major, major discontinuity,
yes.
And it made me so angry as a kid watching it. I still don't like it now. I will say this is a funny joke. It is funny. I'm not saying it's not funny, but I hate how in this episode that is about the old continuity, it disrupts the continuity from previous yes. flashbacks.
So with the Bart pregnancy, it's told to Marge and Homer in Dr. Hibbert's office. He has the afro, and they get "So You've Ruined Your Life" pamphlet.
Yes, yeah. And Homer...
And they haven't bought the new house yet.
No.
So, one, these flashbacks, they're told at different times. Marge finds out from Dr. Hibbert, and then Marge, with Lisa, finds out separate from Homer, and then tells Homer in the bathroom of their apartment. In neither time are they in the house that they only buy because Lisa is being born. Two, Homer was relatively fine with finding out about Marge's pregnancies in both of those scenes. He did not go crazy. He did not lose it at them. And then also, Homer, in all those episodes, his hairline stays at the same level. He does not change his hairline. In Lisa's first word, he is not down to his three hairs again. He is at the same hairline that he is when he starts ripping out his hair.
It was army experiments.
Yeah,
that's true.
There's a million reasons for
giddiness,
how he lost his hair.
Loss of equilibrium.
But this one drives me. This one really bugs me because this is an episode about history. Let's listen to the scene.
It's a great joke, though.
Wow, Dad, you really threw a tantrum like a little sissy girl.
Oh, just that one time.
Actually, when I was about to have Bart.
You're pregnant.
And then when I told him about Lisa...
You're pregnant again?
I agree. It's Dan Castellaneta does a great job of freaking out his Homer.
It's great, yeah. I mean, the continuity is bad, but I just like the joke. There's a lot of rule of threes in The Simpsons, and I like how it escalates.
Yeah, I do like that. And it shows... It at least also pays off the three hairs he's had the entire scene... the entire episode to this point. But... Then the family decides to take a commercial break.
I love this.
Hey, where are you going?
Dad, you can't expect a person to sit for 30 minutes straight.
I'm gonna get a snack and maybe go to the bathroom.
I'll stay here, but I'm gonna think about products I might like to purchase. Oh. Oh, I don't have that.
God, that's messed up.
They're so trained by TV, they can't sit through a regular story without taking their own commercial breaks.
Well, it was a reference to kids having literally no attention span, and so they got worse.
And then, meanwhile, Marge is like, she's thinking about commercials.
Yeah.
That's how trained she is. Then we come back with a great Homer's. It was the opening sound, but Homer's head exploding because Bart's telling the story. That was another like gasp moment in first viewing. Like, what the? This episode has some of the greatest like misdirects in the Merkin years. I'd say that Bart is telling the story reveals it, and then that Homer's butt inflating too. And when he's telling the story,
right, he was a little fatter than letting on.
And but then Homer thinks about like maybe he could get a raise.
You've worked hard at the bowling alley. Why didn't you ask for a raise?
Yeah, a raise. I've never been good enough at any job to deserve one before, but I'm damn good at this one. That's it. I'm gonna march right up to Al and say, Steve, Al, I think I deserve a raise.
Hey, you're a hard worker, and I'd like to give you a raise, but the alley just ain't doing enough business to pay that kind of money.
How about if I triple the business? Then could I get a raise?
Well, yeah, but
I just... The touching of the lip is just so cute. And Homer's got confidence now, you know? Unlike as we talked about in Homer the Great, about him losing confidence from being told he's garbage his whole life, like he's finally... feels confident by doing a good job and in faith in his job.
And he hits the books. He goes from advanced marketing to beginning marketing to looking up what marketing means.
It's a really long setup that almost bored me, but the payoff is what I think is the line of the show.
Yes, it is.
That's the joke.
Of course!
Right.
That's what really happened.
Oh.
My marketing plan attracted a record number of police and fire officials, but few stayed to bowl. I failed.
Homer quits. He's not fired by Al. He quits.
Yeah.
Because he's good at it.
He needs a new job, so he has to quit.
But yeah.
Again, Homer should have applied at the nuclear plant first before quitting. But just, God damn it, Homer. It's some of my favorite gifts I've seen of The Simpsons, of just Homer going, bowling, get your bowling here, just the shotgun exploding.
It's a little too soon for me, frankly.
Damn it. Well, look, there will always be a massacre to make these gunplay jokes unfunny.
And how do you like this, Bob? Your montage of getting a gun is scored by Tom Petty.
Oh.
Let's make it real depressing.
We'll get to that in a few years.
Yes, though it was... I saw people point out that the Simpsons gun control episode had Tom Petty in it on the same day.
So when we give up on gun control, we give up on Tom Petty. Got it.
Speaking of which, did you know that if you shoot the gun in the air, the bullet will come back down?
Uh-huh.
Because that's what happened to somebody at a baseball game.
Yeah.
They were sitting and watching the game, and they just got hit by a bullet and died because somebody had shot in the air.
If it's buckshot, a lot of things come down, which I think is what Homer's firing in the air.
It's true. It's not fireworks, folks. It's a projectile that has to eventually come back down. And that it is crazy that they even recognize that the police and fire department would come, but Homer's not in jail. Like, they just seem to
know.
I mean, Wiggum is the type who would just be like,
he's a white guy with a gun.
Guy.
He wouldn't be in jail.
That's
and
true.
The people at the bowling alley are okay with it. They're not like, what did you do, Homer?
No employee in the bowling alley was like, why, Homer?
They give him a jacket and everything.
It's true, yes.
He was such a good pin monkey, though.
They don't even want... I'll tell you what'll help Al's business. Stop pushing away the young people. Like, they're happy Homer kept the young people away. But then we get to meet little Joey, which I love Joey.
He's dead now.
This was the happiest time of my life. I'll never forget you guys. Especially you, Joey.
See you around, Mr. Homer.
Don't worry, Joey. We'll make it to California someday.
Sure we will, Mr. Homer. Sure we will.
It's gonna be sad around here without you, Homer.
Boy, this is depressing.
Hey, I know what would cheer us up. Bowling!
Little Joey died of tuberculosis.
It's a great gag in the Oh Hello on Broadway show that they talk about all these tropes that are in Broadway productions. But if you have a handkerchief that's just for collecting the blood you cough up, you're going to die soon. Like, that's what they're showing with Joey. I just love that. Yeah, sure we will, Mr. Homer. Sure we will. Like, the shoeshine boy is such a stock character. I love that.
Later, they would come back. This joke would come back in Patches and Poor Violet, the two other urchins.
Yeah. Poor Violet.
I was thinking about the meaning that Homer really gets out of this job, and I was like, man, it's such a menial job at the end of the day. I mean, he's changing out urinal cakes and washing things, but... I suppose, like, going back to... I used to work for a convenience store when I was in high school, and I suppose there was a certain camaraderie there, and I got to be friends with everybody, and I knew the regular customers. Like, I knew the ladies who were coming in to buy lottery tickets and everything. So, and in a way, like... even though the work was boring at the end of the day, like, I still look back on that pretty fondly.
I mean, I kind of miss when I had a cashier job and knew where every video was, where every DVD case was in the video store I worked at. And I took kind of pride in that, of just like, if somebody asked, where's movie X? I could close my eyes and walk to it and grab it off the shelf for them. And I miss doing that. I also miss having a job that I could just listen to podcasts all the time while doing it.
That was super simple, right?
I was not being in control of every step of my destiny. Just relax and do some menial shit.
It sucks not having a manager just to be mad at. It's, but Here's a conspiracy theory of mine on the production of this episode. I think that originally they had planned for a music cue for Homer's long walk to back to the plant, more than just the kind of average one they have in there. And I think they added in those bowling jokes of everybody celebrating their bowling after Homer leaves. I think before, it might have had like a licensed song over it for Homer going
could
there.
Be. It could be.
It just feels a little after the fact of like of having the ADR line. It felt ADR-y of kind of the, what do we do now? Oh, bowling. That always cheers us up. Like, it's funny, but
it is funny.
I wonder if it's ADR.
Did we get a good acid rain joke? Are we still concerned about acid rain? It was a big thing in the early 90s.
Yeah, dude. It was a huge thing. Not only have I never seen it, I don't know anybody who's ever experienced
acid
it.
Acid rain is still very much a thing.
Is it? Where?
Yeah.
I mean, we're already drowning here, in real rain, but yes, a regular
real rain's
rain,
bad enough.
No, I guess, yeah, it's one of those things you hear about with climate change that we don't see the worst of it now because we're in a first world country. Third world countries are suffering
for
sure. All
that's
these
exactly
things
what
much
it
more.
Is.
We threw especially them all under
like
the bus.
Brazil, I believe, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I take Homer's approach of saying, like, no, remember all this. It's just like that rainforest thing. The guys fixed it. No, Dad, I don't think there's that word again.
So Homer has no choice but to reapply at the plant, crawling through the supplicant door, not the applicant door.
Is that a real word?
Supplicant, yeah.
It's a reapplicant?
To supplicate is to, prostate yourself for someone.
Prostate myself?
To crawl up to them and beg.
Not prostate, I'm sorry. Prostrate.
Of all the things I've researched, I couldn't look up a fucking word.
Well, then we get to see Burns's rarely seen secretary. Or I guess maybe she's just the front desk person. She's not Burns. His personal secretary, because that
like
would be
Smithers.
Redundant with Smithers. Yeah.
I just want to point out that, I mean, Homer is lucky that he even has the opportunity to go back. He literally burned the bridge.
Yeah, he should really not be taken back. He's lucky that Burns would rather make him suffer than replace him.
I think making it through that chute is a harrowing journey. If you make it to the other end, he's like coughing and covered in dirt.
I mean,
it's like Metal Gear Solid 4 up in here.
Don't remind me.
If this were 2017, he would have already been replaced, and he probably would have been replaced by somebody just out of college who's making even less money than Homer was.
They would laugh at the very idea of you thinking you could get a new job.
No, I think actually they would wait for three other people to lose their jobs and replace them all with one. That is the 2017 motto.
That's more of it. Anyway, though, this is Homer getting his job back.
Yes? Are you a new applicant?
Actually, I quit and I came to get my job back.
Through there.
So, come crawling back, eh?
Seems like the classy thing to do would be not to call attention to it. Thanks for giving me my old job back.
I'm afraid it's not that simple. As punishment for your desertion, it's company policy to give you the plague.
Sir, that's the plaque.
Ah, yes, the special demotivational plaque to break what's left of your spirit. Because, you see, you're here forever. Don't forget, you're here forever.
Burns has to say it out loud.
Yeah.
Animation junkies... It. When Burns says plague, look at Smithers. His hair is off model in that one shot.
Interesting. Weird. But I think it's also established before this episode that there's sort of like a clear window in front of Homer. Is that correct? Not a blank wall.
He's been watching. Well, I know when the plant was going through a meltdown, orange light was going through there.
Right.
And it shuts down over, like, the metal things go down over it. So,
it sucked to have a desk facing a wall.
It seems pretty depressing.
Well, they clearly introduced, put in a window at some point and moved the plaque.
Yes.
Mr. Burns with his hands in the plaque might be one of my favorite just stills in animation.
It's become a
he
meme.
Looks so
yes.
happy.
He's so proud of that plaque and that he has a special demotivational plaque. And that I also like that Burns says, oh, it's one of the company guidelines. Like, you made it. Like, it's your.
But the way he delivers it and the way he's animated is kind of leaning in, going, the plague.
The plague.
The poison dome didn't work. The plague didn't work. He just wants to kill his employees.
That's all he wants. It seems that Burns just wants to kill his employees all day long, and Smithers has to constantly remind him, like, no, we don't kill them, sir. Reportedly, it was George Meyer who came up with the clever word puzzle that would revert, like, that could be anything on that demotivational plaque, but it has to be what ends up as do it for her.
It's kind of a Mad Folden style joke where you're sort of, you know, eliminating letters to build a different message out of an established phrase.
Yes, yeah. And then Maggie has arrived. Well, I love that Homer pretends he'll be valiant for like 2 seconds. He's like, I just can't keep it anymore. I'm unhappy. It's so horrible. Like, but it's true. Like, every moment of his life has been worth since finding out he's having a baby. Like, I know it's hard to say when it's Maggie, but it's like, maybe you didn't need to have this kid.
Yeah, he's not very enthused during her birth.
Yes.
It's wonderful. It's magical. Oh, boy. Here it comes. Another mouth.
One more push should do it.
Marvelous.
Congratulations, Mr. Simpson. You have a beautiful, healthy baby.
Okay.
Homie, I think someone is saying hello.
Hello? Oh, it's a boy. And what a boy!
That's the umbilical cord. It's a girl.
So Homer and Marge embrace and start kissing, and Maggie pulls a pacifier out of thin air to establish that part of her character.
It does show that Maggie is quite resourceful and smart from the beginning, but then again, Bart did light Homer's tie on fire when he was first born. So Simpson's kids seem to be pretty smart from the beginning. Actually, Lisa is one of the least smart at birth. Like, as in a newborn.
What's your problem, Lisa?
Yeah, get with it, Lisa.
Not using tools immediately out of the womb?
Typical middle child.
They make fun of it on the commentary, even, that Merkin says, like, that's right. Kids who suck pacifiers, it's because they want to kiss. Like, that's why. It doesn't really make sense. Also, we find out Captain McAllister is a father.
It's the catch of the day. I think they threw that baby into the sea afterwards.
Then we're just straight to the ending, and this is one of the times where Merkin obviously hates a treacly ending. He always cuts through it. He always has a joke at the end of it, but not this time. And I think it is because they definitely earn it, I think, yeah.
So you loved her right from the start.
Absolutely.
Then why no pictures?
Oh, there are pictures. I keep them where I need the most cheering up.
Oh.
I keep meaning to hang up the picture I got for Brett of Ernest in the grandma with a neck brace thing and put do it for her right over the podcast area.
It's a tradition for the clip show, not the clip shows, the flashback shows to have a sweet ending at the end.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, there was never a cynical ending in any of these flashback episodes.
Almost any flashback episode.
Yeah.
Any flashback episode about a family ends heartfelt.
It's true. I guess they want to make it that your family memories are worth it and they make you happy ultimately, not sad. Mm-hmm. But
especially because I think Maggie is the child Homer like interacts with the least. Yeah. He often forgets her name and that she exists. So
what's she ever done for anybody?
I was going to say that's kind of what bugs me is, okay, I loved the ending. I was almost getting a little teary watching it. But at the same time, like, Homer like often forgets her name and barely acknowledges that she exists and often forgets he even has another kid. So
he says the dog doesn't count as a kid.
It doesn't quite ring true for me, I suppose. And you just have to kind of go, all right, it's just one episode, and The Simpsons is very much an episode-by-episode kind of thing, and characterizations can change wildly, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I do love all those Maggie drawings, or the art of her in all the photographs are great.
It's all very adorable.
I think my favorite is her in front of Bart, like that they were taking a photo of Bart, and then she kind of photobombed the photo. I like that, but... It's a real cute ending and do
in
it for her.
This episode alone, he almost sits on her.
He always forgets about her. But you'd have to assume once she starts talking and would be growing up, Homer would pay more attention to her, but she never will.
Homer's a terrible father.
There's one thing I want to point out because people will yell at us if we missed it. In the scene on the couch where Marge is explaining to Homer that she's pregnant, there is a full body photo of Maggie in the background. So that's definitely Maggie. Mm. They definitely screwed that up.
They misused the wrong background. They used a modern background, not the flashback background.
But I suppose that, a key line about Homer, like he's, half-assing being a good dad when and they prefer him to just go the F away he usually
does.
Too
much of his love is scary. as Lisa says.
That is your typical Homer. And every once in a while, they'll go, we should make Homer less of a monster and actually give him an episode where he's less of, a little bit less of a monster.
Let him love his children.
He can love his kids in this episode.
This is a really good flashback episode, but I do prefer the births of Bart and Lisa as episodes. I think they get a lot more. We had no clips to play off YouTube because there were no direct references.
But that's the only thing I would slight this episode for, but it's still really good without, I don't want to say pandering, but the nostalgic throwback stuff.
Yeah.
No, I mean, all those callbacks are, they're easy. They're easier than emotional
stories. Ship which for sale.
I mean, the Simpsons were better than anything else in that they went for the very specific references, not just like vague 80s-ish, like that 90s show would do. Just like, all the 90s are up for sale. They like, no, 1980 and 1984, these are the only references we're doing in these episodes.
I'm very partial to that time period, and I love episodes set in that time period, so I adore Lisa's first word. It's one of my favorites, especially because I was born in 1983, so it's like, oh man, this is when I was born too. I can totally identify with it. But this one works because it's not overwhelmed by the references, and it tells a really sharp story. And I mean, of course, it has Nightboat.
But a story I can relate to a little more than any other. I was never in Homer and Marge's situation in either of the other flashbacks. But this one, I understand. I understand a little more. Wanting to get your dream job, being able to tell your boss to fuck off. Holy shit. We've all felt that.
And then having life intervene.
And then the other dumb factoid I have. I've talked endlessly about how when The Simpsons started, I was Bart's age. And now I'm Homer's age. It's really depressing. Maggie's official birth date is May 12th, 1986. I'm going to guess at least half of you. Half of you listening are older, like are older than Maggie. At this
younger
point.
Than Maggie, right?
Maggie's older than my sister.
Yeah.
Maggie's sister's almost 30.
Maggie is 30 years. Wow. Maggie is over 30. The baby.
Man.
30-year-old baby, which is what my girlfriend calls me.
I remember on commentaries they pointed out that they have when they freaked out when they hired a person on staff who was younger than Bart was, who was born after 1980. But now to put it as Maggie even is over 30, it's like, damn.
Yep, we're all going to die, everybody. Thanks for listening, though. I have been your host for this one, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts, every Monday at Retronauts.com, or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine. It's a classic gaming podcast. If you want to get into it, I recommend you find a subject you like related to classic gaming, and you look up our corresponding episode, because I guarantee you we've probably done it. If not, you're out of luck, buddy. But please check us out at Retronauts.com. Anybody else, jump in.
Hi, I'm Kat Bailey, and you should go check out usgamer.net, which is my site about video games. And if you enjoy my podcasting, well, you should check out Axe of the Blood God, which is like Talking Simpsons for RPGs. We talk about, right now, we're in the middle of a big deep dive into Final Fantasy IX, episode by episode. We also did Persona 4 Golden at a different point, so go subscribe to that. And of course, I'm on the Twitter at @_catbot.
I'm HENEREYG on Twitter. You can follow me there for all the updates on The Simpsons. And obviously, if you are listening to this with ads in it, did you know you could hear it with not ads and a week early? That's on Patreon, buddy. Go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, and for $5, starting at $5 a month, you will get access to every episode a week early, ad-free, every episode of The Simpsons first season that's exclusively on there, every episode of Talking Critic, where we go through every episode of The Critic, one by one with Diana Goodman and Michael Raparez, our monthly community chats, our $10 and up people also get access to several videos we specially did, and much more to come after that. So please think about supporting us. It is how Bob and I pay the rent.
And it's a damn bargain, Chris.
Yeah.
And think about listening to some of the other shows in Laser Time Network. Laser Time, I'm not going to let this go. We did a show about the most famous farts. Can you guess them just from the sound and smell of the fart? Yeah, we learned how to make a podcast smell. 30, 20, 10, your weekly look back 30, 20, and 10 years ago. And Video Game Apocalypse, the weekly video game show. We also have a bonus show on our Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime, where we give you a ton of full-length commentaries, cartoon commentaries. We're going to slowly walk you through Clerks, the animated series. We got one episode up there. But this month, join Lizzie and I for a look at Freddy's Nightmares, the anthology show from the... But it has official Robert Englund starring Freddy origins.
Yeah.
That is contained only in that show. It's a 40-minute episode, full-length video.
He's in an actual full episode.
He is. Yeah. And it's doesn't make any sense. And no, it's you'll want to watch it with friends, is all I'm saying. But patreon.com/leisuretime, commentaries and more, and an Elm Street Nightmare all this month, assuming this is still October.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Bart's Comet. We'll see you then.
Infotainment.